are Screen Heroes, and I am Derek, one of your regular hosts. I have Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
With me, they are my other regular hosts, and we have a returning guest, I think the third time.
Third time, I believe, yes.
Robert, hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So,
good to be back.
I know you were on the Civil War episode. What was the other one that you were on? Drawing a blank.
Logan,
right, right. I knew it was recently, so whoa.
Another returning guest.
So this is Cosmo. No, I'm kidding. This is Luna. So we have a dog. We rescued a dog from the animal shelter, and she has discovered that she can jump the fence. This just happened, so we don't have a resolution yet. So instead of having her chill outside while we record, she's going to have to keep us company for a little bit. So we'll see how that goes, and it will either go well, or
it'll
not.
Be a huge disaster, one of the two.
It's going to go poorly. This whole thing is going to be awful. Sorry, guys.
Okay, so why don't we get started? Is there any news that you guys wanted to cover?
Why are they rebooting Hellboy?
No. A dog! I don't
know. I could punch Mike Mignola in the face right now. Like, with Dave Harbour, too? Like,
he's fine. I don't know.
No, let's get the beer-bellied guy from Stranger Things to replace Ron Perlman. No, the whole thing stinks. I'm against it.
I'm just wondering, why are they rebooting when there's been so much desire to finish the current story, the last story?
It's because Ron Perlman's not going to do it without Guillermo del Toro.
And so Guillermo del Toro's being a little
Well, he knows he can ask for a lot of money on it because it's something that everybody wants.
Right.
And so they're probably not willing to pay him and would rather start a universe or something, probably a BPRD type universe where they can have other characters.
So he's being
but the rest of the comics aren't that good. Like,
yeah, but that doesn't mean the movies aren't going to be good. Cause there's comic book movies that have come out where the comic is not that good and the movies are better. So, I mean, all the Cap movies are better than the current Cap storyline. So, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't really have much of an opinion on it. I don't know the comics well enough to really have an opinion about whether or not the movies so far have followed them.
The movies have been great. They've all deviated.
But they're very different than the comic books. Comic books are a lot darker, a lot more... I mean, they've had some weird stuff in the movies, but not nearly like the comic books. And so, I mean, I understand where they're going with it, but we actually did a podcast talking about like the R-rated renaissance that was going to happen with when Deadpool made $1 million or $1 billion.
Sure. And this is going to be R-rated.
This is the kind of stuff that's going to happen. And I love Hellboy, right? I love those weird, if you follow the show, you know I love Justice League Dark and all those weird kind of characters. But I'm not sure that this is the right direction. I kind of like that Hellboy was a little lighter and a little more accessible.
So, speaking of Justice League Dark, it found another director.
Did it? I must have missed that.
It's no longer in movie purgatory. They have a script. It's moving forward.
Do you know who the director is?
I forget the name. I'm not going to get
anybody
on my phone
to
look. He's done some work, but not I'm familiar with, to be honest. He said that the lineup is going to include Constantine, Zatanna, Deadman, Swamp Thing.
Yes, that was what I was waiting for. Because he's got one of the interchangeable ones.
Do you have personal feelings about Swamp Thing,
Obviously,
Ryan?
What about Etrigan? I assume you're going to have Etrigan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Etrigan.
Yeah,
I love Etrigan.
That's going to be the...
They're using the New 52... Cast
he's
going to
be the Drax.
Minus Madame Xanadu.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Which is too bad.
Like, yeah, because I really like Madame Xanadu, too. That would have been nice. But
the best thing
is pretty
that
cool.
DC has done so far is highlight the women instead of just have one standalone woman in every film.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I think that I did hear that it's supposed to be much smaller scale.
Yeah.
Rather than it being like a big earth-ending kind of situation.
I'm good with that.
I'm fine with that, too. Nothing needs to... Like, not every movie needs to be giant blue sky beam that's going to destroy the world.
Right.
Correct. I agree.
I want Etrigan to be like the Drax, where he's not like... He's not... like the first Guardians Drax, where he's not a comedian, and... you know, he's just kind of funny by his personality. You know, the rhyming thing, I think, will be a really good gimmick. So I'm hoping that they can kind of push that.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so we're going to pause here. Sorry, guys. All right, we're back. Hi, everybody. Sorry about that. So we're back on track here. We were talking about Justice League Dark. We've got a new director, a new direction for that, based heavily on the New 52, you were saying, right?
At least the cast is the lineup. When they did the Justice League Dark. Like I said, I am a little disappointed they're cutting out Madame Xanadu. Like, I've been really happy with the DC's treatment of women. You know, Wonder Woman is their fourth film, not their 15th. Right. 16.
And she was she was in BVS, so she was in the...
Suicide Squad had four major female roles. Well...
Major is debatable.
Two major female roles, two minor ones, and then two female villains out of that. Marvel has yet to have any female villains.
Wonder Woman's number three, isn't it?
Thor Ragnarok is going to be a
steal.
Hello.
BVS. And then Wonder
Suicide
Woman.
Suicide Squad.
Oh, Suicide Squad.
Thor Ragnarok is going to have Hella. Right. It hasn't come out yet, but.
Exactly. That's my point. They've tried multiple times. The director of Thor 2 wanted to originally have Enchantress because she made the most sense.
That would have been confusing. The Suicide Squad coming out with Enchantress as a
Thor 2 would have been, you know.
It might have been better.
It would have been first. That's so true. It would have looked like DC was copying. And then I imagine they would have called her Amora, which is her.
Seems likely.
Name. And then.
But Hella, for being the first female villain in Marvel, looks scary so as heck. Great. Like, the shot with like the Jack Kirby big horns. Yeah.
I love that helmet. Cool. I don't want to do that cosplay, but I want that helmet.
Right? That would be pretty cool.
I would wear that all the time, you know, going to the bank, DMV.
It seems like it wouldn't be practical in the car.
That'd be great. It wouldn't walk into doorway sideways.
Speaking of which, I do really like Thor's helmet that he gets in the arena. It looks so good.
It looks worse than his original helmet, in my opinion.
Glad they specified a difference, like why his outfit is so different, because I was a little nervous. It's like, where'd the hair go? And what is happening? So.
You know, like the short...
I like every kind of Chris Hemsworth. I just want an explanation.
Oh, I see.
I just want to understand why.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about the Chris Pine monologue in SNL, where he explained the Chris?
He's the only. Yeah, he's not this Chris. He's not this Chris.
He's also the only Chris that sings, and that's a way to my heart.
Chris Evans can sing, I think.
I've never heard Chris Evans. I've only heard Chris Pratt do his Dave Matthews impersonation
and Eminem.
Parks and Rec.
And Eminem.
I have not heard that.
I guess, but he did. Yeah, on the radio, he came on and rapped like the entirety of "Forget About Dre."
It was
hilarious, actually. He can do every line. It's ridiculous.
You remember that one time when our friend Russ did that? We were just really...
Was that Forget About Dre? That was some other Eminem song,
I think. Like four Eminem songs.
Your brother was
there that night.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He did Careless Whisper by Seether. Not by George Michael.
Yes,
so
George Michael
would
have been much better, yeah.
I agree.
I followed up Russ's renditions with...
Nickelback, right?
Fresh
or Creed.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
He did do Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah, with John. John and I sang with arms wide open.
Now we know why Gamer Heroes viewership is so low.
I mean, you can think that.
I can know that.
Whatever works for
you.
I
know. I mean, they could sing...
You could probably get more viewers if you did another Creed song or Nickelback.
We might sing. You never know.
Do a musical episode.
There we go.
I am going to do a shameless plug here, though. We have our first interview this week. We're interviewing the makers of Shovel Knight, which is Yacht Club Games.
That's really cool.
We're really excited about that, so make sure to tune in on Friday.
Shovel Knight has blown up. That's a cosplay I want to see you do.
That'd be a tough armor set. At least there's not like a lot of detail, but it's a lot of armor.
Don't mind. So. We just did big armor builds. You can do it for us.
Yeah, I did do a big armor build. So she. So did
yours is mostly suits. Yeah.
There's a lot of armor.
Little,
I think
there's a little bit.
Oh, here we go.
I don't know. There's a cape covering most of it, so it's hard to tell.
Did you guys see Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, yeah.
What movie? I'm kidding. Yes, so Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is now in theaters. I'll go ahead and just give you a couple of the numbers, not everything that's written down here that you guys can see, but big stuff, $200 million budget. Put that in perspective, that is 50 less than Civil War and BVS both got, but it is 35 more than Suicide Squad, to kind of put that in perspective. Mm-hmm. It crushed the first film.
Which the first film had a pretty big opening.
The first film did really well. The first film opened domestically with a little over 94 million.
In August, right? Or was it September?
It was August, later September. In the year, yeah. This one opened with 146.5 domestically. And in just the 5 days internationally, it has gone well past the 50% mark to catching up to the first film's entire run.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So that's huge. It comes in as the fifth best opening for an MCU film behind Iron Man 3, Civil War, Age of Ultron, and the first Avengers.
Okay.
It beat out Iron Man 2. And those are the only, including Iron Man 2, those are the only MCU films to open with at least 100 million opening weekend. It is the ninth best opening ever for just a superhero film. So it did really well. So why do you guys think that is?
I think it was because the first one.
We all know why it is.
The first one was, it was so popular. I mean, it was so different from the other comic book movies. Everybody fell in love with it, with all the characters, so they wanted to see more.
The first one blew everybody away.
Oh yeah.
People that weren't comic book movie fans went and saw that movie. Exactly. You know, when you go to work and there's a bunch of people talking about a comic book movie and you don't normally hear that, it's a pretty big deal, you know.
Absolutely. A lot of people went because of the soundtrack too, just because Blue Swede was in the trailer. I mean, that's why my dad saw it. He was not going to go, but he loved that song. And he was super excited that it was actually in the movie, too. How many times do trailer companies use a completely different song than what's in the film?
In this movie, it was very sad. There was one that was in the trailers that was not in the movie. It made me sad.
Oh, sorry, Ryan. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think kind of along the line of your dad, I was going to see the movie either way, of course, but that trailer with the music.
Locked it in.
Yes, exactly.
It was beautiful.
That is what sold
me. Unexpected. The lineup, very much unexpected.
Chris Pratt flipping the bird in a really arrogant way. Them calling them, like, the five of them a-holes. Like,
yeah.
It was great.
I actually didn't love that line. I thought that was the most awkward line in the whole movie, but.
That actor is rather awkward, so
I love that actor. But
I'm drawing a blank. Who are we talking about?
The guy that plays a tick? I can't remember. Peter Serafinowicz.
Oh, right.
Yes, Gesundheit.
I gotcha. Yeah. No, but I think you guys are right. I think that the first movie was surprising to a lot of people. Because, I mean, let's face it. Not a lot of the main public had any clue who the Guardians were.
Right.
I had to go out and buy one of the graphic novels just to familiarize myself a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you guys know who they were before?
Actually, I did.
Yeah?
I was reading them before the movie.
Nice. Okay, so then, just out of curiosity then, how did you feel walking out of the first movie? Did you think that it did okay for that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, as you know, I'm sure many people have talked about, the adaptations from books or comics to movies, there's always going to be differences. It's never going to be 100%. But I thought I did the comics justice. I really did. I liked the way they portrayed all the characters. Sure, some of there were different things, but I loved it.
Fair enough.
Good.
As a casual reader, I really only read Annihilation when they brought the entire Marvel Cosmic Universe together and fought Thanos. I really thought that they improved on a lot of the characters, to be honest. You know, I didn't find Star-Lord that interesting beforehand, or Gamora, and since then, there has been a huge written improvement. This is one of those where the movies have influenced the comics in a good way.
I agree.
Also, Rocket had been portrayed as British. He would say bloody all the time. And
that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And now he's portrayed as Bradley Cooper, and that's 10 times better.
I do agree. His gruffness just works for the character that plays.
Absolutely. Not saying that there's anything wrong with British. It's just, if it's not like Simon Pegg saying the C word out of Rocket's mouth, there's really no point to it. Rocket needs to be that gruff little
I would have watched that, though.
Yeah, Simon Pegg would have been a good...
Right? He would have been a good...
It would have been a very different Rocket, but obviously, I would have been okay with it.
Well, all right. So let's focus in then on the new movie here. Just like initial impressions, we'll go around. Did you guys like it? And did you guys like it as much or more than the first film? Ryan.
That's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question.
No, I did not like it more than the first film. Yes, I did enjoy it, but there's a lot of buts to it for me. There's a lot of things I didn't like about it that kind of disappointed me.
Okay. I actually have to completely agree with that. I was not under Guardian's spell. Guardians is a great movie. It is not the best Marvel movie out there. It's not the best team-up out there. It was a fun, good movie with characters I didn't think they could make a good movie out of. So I was pleasantly surprised, but I'm not on, like, the Guardians train. And this movie, it didn't let me down, but it wasn't better than the first. So if that puts everything into perspective.
Robert?
I would say, it wasn't better than the first. But I will clarify and say rarely is a sequel better or even as good as the first. I mean, not every sequel can be Empire Strikes Back. It just doesn't.
Or T2.
Or T2.
Or Aliens. Or yeah, whatever. I mean, there's a few. Yeah, there's the big examples.
It but, happens, but... Yeah.
Or House Party.
Yeah, but it's...
you said yeah.
But,
got you.
Weekend at Bernie's too. Yeah. We forgot about
obviously,
that.
Obviously. Yeah.
But there are sequels that are better, but...
Yeah.
More often than not, they're not better. So, that being said, I actually enjoyed the movie. Now, well, you know, can I nitpick and say there were this and that I didn't like?
Oh, we're going sure. to. That's
what we're
going
to
oh,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I wouldn't have showed up tonight if we weren't going to do that.
But, you know what, I enjoyed it, and I would recommend it. I thought it was, if you just enjoy the first one, you'll like this one. It's good.
I agree with that.
Fair
if
enough.
If you liked one, you'll like the other one.
Yep.
Maybe not as much, they don't have to be equal, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. I do hold the first Guardians pretty high up.
Oh, I know. It's a space opera.
I love the first Guardians. I really do. I think that it might be my favorite Marvel movie. I'm not entirely sure. It's a hard thing for me to say, but it might be. It's at least top three. So, you know, I had high expectations, and this one was fine. So let's dive into it then. Where do you guys want to start?
We can start with individual characters. We can start with soundtrack. We can start with plot line.
Let's go with soundtrack. If okay. That works. Yeah. Because, you know, the soundtrack was such a
kind of unorthodox.
It was such an integral part of the first movie.
Let's be honest. Guardians had a very iconic soundtrack. And I say that only because the other Marvel movies up until then had only instrumental scores unless Tony Stark was walking in, and then it was AC/DC.
Yeah, there's actually a really, really great YouTube video on the Marvel movies and how the scores are very uninteresting for the
Absolutely.
Popularity of the movies. You know, a lot of the popular franchise movies have a very, you can pick them out, their scores.
Yeah.
And you can match them up between the sequels and everything because they're memorable. And none of the Marvel movies have that except for Guardians.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
I blame James Gunn for that entire thing. Like, if it,
I think he'd probably not be upset that you blamed him.
Right, exactly. It's not a good thing. Sometimes, or it's not a bad thing, but he has very dynamic scores in all of his movies, and I find that a great trait. Like, that to me is one thing that Zack Snyder has over Marvel right now, is his scores are usually very interesting, and Marvel's just sort of very boring. So, this soundtrack did not get me all hyped up like the last one did. I thought there were better mixtape highs and lows done, you know, the high fidelity. You gotta start off with this one and then bring it down and then bring it back up. Like, that's what it did.
Right. Yeah.
And this one didn't. And
I wasn't sure if that was just a me thing, because I think that the era that the first movie focused on is an era of music that's probably my favorite. So I loved...
Well, the second one should have had that same quality.
Absolutely.
Because it was the same time period. Maybe a year
later. It was a little bit later.
But still similar.
Yeah, I mean, so
the
like...
music didn't change that much in the 2 years or whatever. It was the difference, so...
Yeah, there were some stylistic things for me. But okay. I really liked Fleetwood Mac being in there, The Chain. I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan.
I think four songs in there that were good, yeah.
Yeah.
And that one, I'll say that... Most of the good ones for me were spoiled in the trailers. The
I can see that.
Oh, really?
Fox on the Run.
Yeah.
And The Chain were both spoiled in the trailers. And then that's the one that I mentioned earlier that I was really disappointed wasn't in the movie was Suffragette City by David Bowie. I was really disappointed there wasn't a Bowie song in this one. James Gunn said he wanted David Bowie to be in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he passed away, sadly, before that could happen. But that he was... This was early on in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 filming. He said he was... wanting to use a Bowie song in the second one so that Bowie would be the only artist on the first and the second soundtrack.
Mm.
But
I'm sure there was a reason. But
well, at least he made the trailers. You know, that's better than having no acknowledgement, because Bowie was such a powerhouse in that time period. Like, there's very few other artists or groups that you could name that would be anywhere near that powerhouse in that
time period. That's very fair.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about the gigantic plot revolving around Brandy?
So I'm a sucker for people explaining movie lyrics or song lyrics in a movie.
Yeah.
Or like music, like American Psycho, for example.
Yeah.
Where he's talking about Huey Lewis in the News, Whitney Houston. Phil Collins. And Genesis. I'm a huge sucker for that. I love music, and anytime a character is shown to have a very deep connection to a specific song or artist, that works for me.
Yeah.
And have it being Kurt Russell and have the song being Brandy, I mean, that right there was a perfect concoction for me. You know, there's other songs that could have made it not as good. And if it was any other actor, that could have not as good. But yeah, I think Kurt Russell doing Brandy and it actually making sense in the story, for me, it worked.
I agree. Totally. Okay.
I think something that maybe this is a good thing is that the soundtrack for this film didn't stand out as much to me and take me out of the movie. Whereas the first one had so many of songs that I truly love that I focus a lot on that music. And not as much on what was happening on the screen. And I wonder if at times they did this on purpose, make the songs blend better.
So but I don't think it
pulled
did.
Out. You don't think so?
No, I'm kind of with Ryan. The soundtrack, while it was good, I just felt some sort of, at times, disconnect between the songs chosen and the movie, where I didn't in the first.
I think that besides The Chain, the song for me that stood out in the whole movie was Mr. Blue Skies by ELO, because that song was perfect. Absolutely perfect. And James Gunn said in the first movie that he wanted an ELO song, Electric Light Orchestra. He wanted that in the movie, and because they were another pretty powerful group in that time period, and he couldn't get the rights to any of the songs that he wanted for the first one. So I was really curious to see if they used an ELO song in this one, and Mr. Blue Skies fit. Like, it gives me chills thinking about it, because it was just such a perfect song for the movie. And kudos to James Gunn for using a Cat Stevens song that wasn't Cat in the Cradle.
Yes,
right. I mean, that song would have fit in this movie.
It would have.
But I think the song they picked, Dad and I, or whatever the name of that song is.
Father and Son.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. That would have been, that was... Yeah, I think it was a better
choice.
He really
has a daddy hang up, doesn't he?
He does. But okay. I honestly think Cat in the Cradle would have been good too, but he definitely picked the better song, I think, for the movie.
That
song I'm not as big of a fan of. Right. So wasn't like a catch, like it didn't catch my attention like Cat in the Cradle probably would have.
So while we're talking about music, something that stood out to me and really irked me many, many times, I think I counted maybe 4 or 5 instances of this. Every time Star-Lord did something like this, which was a lot, there was a very loud la-da-da that happened, and I was so annoyed. I was like, why is the score swelling when he looks away from the camera? It happened during his exchange with Gamora on Ego. It happened between him and Ego twice. Like,
it's like Christopher Nolan's
a little bit.
You know, every time.
It was just Star-Lord's thinking.
Star-Lord's thinking.
I mean, that's obviously a stylistic choice by James Gunn.
It really
didn't take me out of the movie. Like, I can't say I noticed it.
I did not.
But if I had picked up on it, it would probably have bothered me.
It's going to bother you now that I said
probably,
something.
Probably, yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Or at least you'll notice it now that I said something. It may not bother you.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I feel like I need to watch it again, because that I did not notice.
I caught it on the third time, and then I couldn't stop catching it.
Fair enough.
But small nitpicky thing, like if your characters are going to have a theme, it needs to be incredibly epic when they're in an epic pose like the Wonder Woman one, or it needs to blend in and kind of just appear. Like if Star-Lord had a theme every time he pulled out his guns, I would have been like, oh, here it comes, fight scene.
I think the song that stood out, like if I had to pick a theme for the group, the one when I hear Fox on the Run now, I think of Guardians of the Galaxy every time.
Yeah, I'm totally
I love Blue Swede, and I would maybe give that to a specific character, but when I think of the team, I think, I mean, Fox and the Run, but it is in almost all the previews, all the trailers for it. I mean, and it really works for the team.
But you're talking more of the instrumental score, right? Yeah. And I'm wondering, and I'm curious if this was what they were going for. I'm wondering if they were trying to pick up on the Star Wars vibe where, you know, the main characters, you know, a lot of them had their own themes. You know, there was Leia's theme and Luke's theme.
If they were there, they didn't stand out to me at all.
Yeah.
Vader had a theme whenever he's entering.
The Imperial March.
They didn't do that for something epic that Star-Lord was doing. They did it for a calm, pensive moment, and that seems weird to me. Anyway, let's move on from the soundtrack. We've discussed that.
Sure. So let's talk about cast. Let's talk about Kurt Russell. Let's just dive in and talk about Kurt Russell.
Incredible. So much fun. Probably my favorite part of the film.
He was in it way more than I thought he was going to be, which was a great surprise.
Yeah. Yes and no. So, I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan, obviously. I've talked about that on the podcast before.
We had an entire podcast dedicated to him because of you.
Kurt Russell is awesome.
All three of the heroes are big fans of Kurt Russell, but I'm the only one that would like, one of them is my adopted dad, probably. I don't know, maybe you guys would too. I love my dad, by the way, if you're watching. But,
Hudson has good things to say, so maybe I'll take it.
I didn't like, spoiler alert, because we haven't spoiled a lot.
Yeah, we haven't really.
So turn away now.
If you haven't seen the movie or if you, you know, don't want anything spoiled, we're going to be talking about everything. So
I did not like him being the bad guy.
I was
really? I love that.
I did not like that. Why is that? Because I thought that the character is such a huge character, not physically, I guess, but also just like in potential. That the way Marvel works, they kill off their villains every movie,
and they kill him off. It's annoying.
It is very
annoying. Ego is such an probably the most interesting character for me of, not just because Kurt Russell's playing, although it probably seems that way, but because you don't really know about him, and the way he explains is like, that's cool, your brain like made a bunch of matter, and then you turn into a planet, and now you can control everything, or, you know, within reason. That's pretty cool, and not something we've seen in Marvel before, so... You know, making him the bad guy and killing him off was not good for me. And then also...
Making him the bad guy, but keeping him would have been 10 times better.
I would have felt a lot better about it. Him, you said he was in the movie a lot more than you expected. I think that his avatar was in the movie more than I expected. But like for the last third of the movie, it wasn't him. It was just his voice and a bunch of CG. So you lost a lot of that Kurt Russell... energy that you get when he's or feeling whatever you get, so you know what I'm talking about.
The only thing I was really disappointed about is he monologued his entire plan. Like
he clearly had never seen The Incredibles.
He was a James Bond villain straight up.
But that's because there was nothing there that could threaten him. What was going to stop him?
Let's go into that because let me just backtrack just a second. When I said that. Kurt Russell being the bad guy, I really love that. I don't love that they killed him off, because that is a huge problem in the MCU, that Loki's the only one who's allowed to ever live.
I really wanted Ronan to live, because he's very important to
the
But if
I had to pick between the two, I would have picked Ego. I mean, Ego's such a huge...
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't have killed off either.
But I think part of the problem is when you make a being that is so powerful that he can stretch out to 1,000 worlds... keep him alive? You have to have some really good way to tie that up to how they get away.
Could have resolved the daddy issues. Like, that. You know, they didn't have to beat him in a traditional sense. They could have beat him in the fact that, you know...
I think it would have drastically changed the movie because you couldn't have had him be who he was. Because who he was not dad and son. He didn't really want a son. He just needed the extra power to complete his work.
Right. Maybe, you know what I mean? But he had never developed a relationship with one of his kids at that time. I mean, so you never know how things are. I'm not a story writer. I'm not a writer for movies, obviously. Although I try to be on our pitch episodes. But, I mean, I think there was a way to do it to keep him around.
There is always a way to do it. Always.
So, real quick, in chat, Jordan was actually thinking that Ronan might still be alive in the Soul Stone.
I think that's like saying a Red Skull is still alive in the
honestly, that's actually a valid point because in the comics, so whenever a lot of characters who have been killed by the Soul Stone end up living in the Soul Stone. Adam Warlock, for example, everybody thought he was dead. He was alive.
So what about like the people that Ronan killed with the Soul Stone. They're all, there's like 30 people alive. And
it's like Voldemort's wand.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
He had the Power Stone. The Soul Stone is the only one we have not seen yet. So, just gonna say.
So yeah, the Soul Stone hasn't killed Ronan, so, or didn't kill Ronan, yeah. So he
that doesn't mean
he
couldn't be trapped in the stone.
I guess.
But
was killed.
That, just like Ego could still be alive if there's a tiny particle of him floating somewhere.
That is
like,
well,
Groot
grows from a twig.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's,
yeah, but if you have that mechanic
thinking
with everybody, then it's like, okay,
yeah,
no death is meaningful.
Yeah.
It's
no,
very
true.
Wishful thinking.
So
they should just not kill their villains off the first time. Like, how many times in the comic books do these characters fight the same villain? So many times. Ronan's important because he's not a bad guy in the comics. He works for the Kree, and he's the executioner. That means he just deals out the justice of, you know, the Kree. So
yeah, sometimes he's a villain, sometimes he's not a villain.
Exactly.
I think my problem is more that you don't get an actor like Kurt Russell and then kill him off in that movie. You don't pull him into the universe and kill him off in one movie, right?
But I mean, they've done that with so many.
Hugo Weaving, yeah. But I mean, and you know, Hugo Weaving was great, and all these other villains are
Hugo
great.
Weaving,
but
they kept alive-ish because
it's been how
they
many
wanted
movies?
Him to come back. Hugo Weaving does not enjoy playing Red Skull and has refused to come back. So if you think Red Skull is going to show up, Hugo Weaving will not be playing him. He said, done. Not going to happen. Hugo Weaving is out.
Maybe he'll just do the voice work like he did for V.
I mean, let's go through this. Malekith was good and did not get any explanation for his motives. Just, you know, random dark elf, hates everybody, you know.
Well, that was all cut, but...
And it's terrible. Yeah. It's really awful. Robert Redford's character in Civil War, killed off for no reason.
I think Robert Redford is the only one that you can name that was a villain in any of the movies that would be on the same level as Kurt Russell, and even that would be debatable. I still think Kurt Russell is a bigger actor than Robert Redford.
So, well, I mean,
Jeff Bridges.
Are they going to kill Jeff Goldblum off?
Jeff Bridges.
I still think Kurt Russell is bigger.
But keep in mind, we're talking much earlier in the MCU. Guardians 2 is like the 14th movie, right? Yeah. So in Iron Man 1, when you got Jeff Bridges, right?
Well, they wouldn't have gotten Kurt Russell in Iron Man 2, obviously.
Right.
Yeah,
but like, you know, so you keep the big guy around. Or when you did First Avenger, you keep Hugo Weaving around because you're trying to build this thing and the big names still draw people. I am sure that even though this is the 14th MCU film, there are people who went to see it because Kurt Russell was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely. I mean, I would have seen it without Kurt Russell, but it certainly made it better.
I guarantee you Goldie Hawn did that.
So let's go back to the whole monologuing thing, because here's my issue with it. He knows that Peter is incredibly powerful, and that if anybody in the galaxy can really challenge him, it's the dude standing 3 feet in front of him, his son. And what does he do? He tells Peter that he was responsible for giving his mother a deadly cancer, and then breaks the Walkman. He did the only thing he possibly could have done to, like, lose.
Well, his name is Ego.
Right? I was going to be like,
I mean, he doesn't think he can do it wrong.
It's Ego. I get that. And the whole concept of what he's doing is incredibly egotistical and pompous. But that hit a line for me that was a little too ridiculous. It was, if that one sentence is removed from the movie, Ego wins. That one sentence is all it was that pushed Peter over the edge.
You're totally right. If he would have kept his mouth shut about that, he would have been fine.
But I don't like that the whole end is hinging on
that
one thing.
I think that the like battle and stuff like that at the end was a problem for me too, because Ego had been there since the beginning of everything,
time,
because that's what the Celestials were, as I understand it.
Correct.
And created himself as a physical form and all these other things. So he'd had millennia of practicing creating things, right? And then he tells Star-Lord that he can make things, and Star-Lord makes a little energy baseball. And then all of a sudden, by just saying, hey, I gave your mom cancer and here's your Walkman, he can make all this crazy stuff happen. Rock hands and like all
giant this Pac-Man.
Yeah. It's like, okay, that's a bit like, even if he's a prodigy, that's insane to me. And although I did like the way they did that better than I like Green Lantern, for example, like his creativity with what he was doing, I thought was cooler than what I've seen in the movie. I haven't read the comic books.
I really didn't like the Pac-Man thing.
I thought it was a little too on the nose, but I mean, it's a character.
It was goofy. It made me laugh.
I was really excited
they got the rights to it.
I figured it was coming, especially after he already said the Pac-Man.
I was waiting for Skeletor.
I really wanted to see Giant Rock Kurt Russell slam into Giant Rock Chris Pratt and have, like, you know, a Rock'em Sock'em robot battle. And it wasn't. You had Giant Kurt Russell and Pac-Man, and then they just instantly disappear as soon as they hit each other.
Because they're equally powerful, even though Kurt Russell has that was not great. Not the best climax of a...
It wasn't. It was pretty disappointing.
I was about to say, and you did mention one thing that irked me a little bit, is calling Ego a Celestial.
Like he
they called him that in the in the movie, so...
That's true.
Yeah, they called him that that's what I'm saying. They called him that in the movie.
I thought you were saying something about me. No, I was like, that's what he was called.
He wasn't part of the Celestials.
Yeah, he wasn't really...
He was just a planet.
Yeah, he was a living planet.
Just a living planet.
Yeah, I mean, like Logan. It worked for the movie. Yeah. It worked for the movie.
I mean, he's not a god. He's a planet. He can be destroyed.
The gods were in the movie.
Yes,
right?
They were.
That was cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So now let's focus back here just for a second. In chat, Purely has said that basically Star-Lord's anger allowed him to focus.
Which is the stupidest thing.
Now, so here's the thing. I think that would have worked.
We call our viewers stupid.
I'm saying that's really dumb because when you're angry, you don't focus better than you do when you're...
You're totally right.
I think that depends because that's...
I don't think it
Watch a Rocky movie, all right? But I think... Here's the thing. I think that would have worked if Star-Lord was, like, throwing energy around and just, like, slamming him and... Instead of it being, like, very concentrated objects, like the fact that it was literally Pac-Man or the fact that he could
control... Turn his fist into a rock.
Yeah. Right, control things so specifically. That's what doesn't work for me. It should have been crazy power that was barely controllable, right? That would have worked.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so...
It would have been better for sure.
Well, we've talked a lot about Kurt Russell. I want to talk about the other new character, Mantis.
Yes.
I thought she was adorbs.
I loved Mantis.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
She was a lot of fun. I really liked her. Very unique. I thought she was a good addition to the team, and I really hope they keep her around for the next one.
I hope so, too. I could tell immediately that fans were going to, like, ship her and Drax, so I love that they just called that out immediately, and both of them were like, no, I don't like you.
They have this running gag about her being ugly, and I thought that was great. Yeah, like, yeah. Drax says, you're so hideous, you know?
But it was important that that happened, because that's also why she trusts him and not Gamora, because she understands that he's honest. He might not always be nice about it, but he is trustworthy.
And that's what made her happy, because when, like, she's touching him and he's saying these things, his honesty is making her happy, too. Like, it's a good, fun relationship. She's a nice addition to the team.
She is kind of bright and quirky and not a copy of any of the other personalities.
No.
I felt like one of the issues with this one was that the personalities of the main four were a little too similar compared to in the first movie. They were more dynamic.
Except Gamora still doesn't get to be funny.
Not at all. She is as serious as humanly possible.
And that
it's
that works.
Painful considering how funny Zoe Saldana is in real life.
I know.
Even Nebula gets some fun lines. Like she gets to be bitingly sarcastic.
Yeah.
You know, she gets like looks and stuff, you know, like, you know, when Sean Gunn's character touches her on the shoulder.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I really want to see Gamora like rip out a throat and then just sit there with her giant sword and like pick her teeth. Like that would be hilarious and still keep that badass persona that she has. Like,
okay.
Yeah, like, it would just be ridiculous, but
she's, like, legitimately in the top 10 fighters in Marvel, and I don't think, in comic books, and I don't think that they've ever really shown her to be even better than Black Widow,
two, she doesn't even get, like, another personality quirk other than straight.
Yeah,
like, she's badass. The straight man of the group, and that's all that she gets. She doesn't get to smile, she doesn't get to make jokes, like, Black Widow gets to make jokes every once in a while about picking up after all the boys, and Hulk being a big damn dork, and, you know.
No, Gamora...
They let her have a sense of humor after, like, 10 movies, guys.
No, Gamora doesn't get anything from that, and I think that it's interesting that she doesn't get to even showcase her fighting abilities, because... Drax ends up getting the big fight scenes.
Except he had no fight scenes in this, other than Gamora's like stabbing the thing. Yeah, but that was like, literally all he did the whole movie.
Yeah, but Gamora's only real fight scene was running from Nebula's ship
and fighting Nebula, like using the giant gun,
that's not a fighting ability. She's just holding a machine gun.
Of like grabbing the arms and stuff like that. You didn't see the fight choreography.
No, I absolutely
we needed
agree.
The guys that did like the Matrix fight scenes. My point to there do was a that Gamora Nebula fight.
Drax was awesome. Not used, and that was very disappointing.
I wanted to see more of Drax.
More of
him fighting at least.
Rocket got a really cool fight scene though between him and the Ravagers. So yeah, I really liked that. Yeah. That was very entertaining.
That was awesome.
That was so good.
He was like Rambo taking out the army. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, like Junkyard Rambo. Like he built all this random stuff.
I mean, that highlights all of Rocket's good qualities and what he brings to the team.
And the fact that he's humming the tune to distract him.
Yeah.
One of Quill's songs.
That was an enjoyable scene.
My big problem with Drax, kind of going back to Drax, was that in the first movie, it was unintentional humor from Drax.
Absolutely.
And that was what made him funny. In this movie, it was...
left Drax out of the thing.
He was...
I totally did, yeah.
In this movie,
he was
billed
really low on IMDb.
He was a comedian the whole time, and that's basically all he did the entire movie. And that bothered me a lot. I think that the humor stemming from the fact that he doesn't understand euphemisms and things that aren't like a direct...
Metaphors.
Yeah, whatever. All these different things. I think that was funnier than what we got. I think we got dick jokes and like... my nipples hurt,
so
and like,
many.
And it was like, okay, my turds are epically large. Like, okay, guys, we can do better than that.
I think my main problem, like, that was an issue. Mm-hmm. My main problem with Drax is that this is only supposed to be like 2 or 3 months after the first film in the timeline, and he completely 100% understands metaphors.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
Without question. I mean, how did that happen?
He's a fast learner.
But he's been out in the universe before with other species. He wasn't like, you know, exiled on his planet and they saved him or something. He had already been out. So what happened in those 2 months that hadn't happened in his entire life?
See, it makes sense to me that after 2-3 months of close quarters living with Star-Lord and Rocket, some of that rubs off on you. So saying, you know, like, I don't think he would ever admit to having a weakness on his body.
Yeah.
So the sensitive nipple thing was there for...
He's supposed to be a warrior. That's like, his whole thing is to kill Thanos. Yeah. That's his entire reason for being alive.
But the turd thing totally...
I mean, I laughed. I'm not going to lie. I laughed at all those jokes.
I did too.
Just too many in my
But yeah, opinion. there was the humor in this one. It was a funnier movie, but it felt like a totally... There was so many tones going on, and that's overall my problem with the full movie. When I was talking about like the things I didn't like, is like you had a hugely funny scene, and then you had a super serious scene, and you had somebody make a joke in the middle of that serious scene where it didn't fit for me anyway. It may have fit for some people, and that was overall a huge problem, and Drax was a big part of that.
I think the first film, all the humor just came off more natural.
Yeah,
agreed.
Right?
It's like just, they were writing jokes to tell the other guys ahead in this one. Like, it was, you know.
You said that you thought that Chris Pratt channeled a little too much Andy Dwyer in this one.
I did. I did say that.
There was definitely more.
Because I feel like in the first one, he was, you know, he was an action star. He really pulled it off well. And I mean that in a positive way. He really pulled it off. But in this one, he seemed so comfortable in the role that I think a lot of that slipped into just him being Chris Pratt. And a lot of the humor in Andy Dwyer is Chris Pratt's...
improvisation.
Right, improv during the show. And I feel like Peter Quill just became Chris Pratt with cool guns.
Yeah.
You know, and that works for certain situations, for certain actors who have been in the industry so long, they can just be them.
Like Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
He looks at, like, the Grandmaster. Right. It's like him in special makeup. And that's...
Or like De Niro. Robert De Niro is just, he's Robert De Niro. Harrison Ford is just, he's just Harrison Ford. Not
Will Smith.
Right? No. Yeah. And
Will Smith is Will Smith as Will playing himself in every role. But we're not going to get into that. That's not what we're talking about. Deal with it, Derek.
I'm going to find new hosts.
Go for it. You are evil.
What? Anyway, but no. So I was a little bit concerned that Chris Pratt came a little
good try.
Too much into the role is really my point there.
I will say that we can dive into Star-Lord a lot, but I mean, I think a lot of it is very similar. There was a little bit of difference, but you already touched on all that. I don't really have anything to add to that. I'll say that this kind of goes in line with Groot, because I think that's a big part of the movie we haven't talked about. The opening title sequence, probably my top three favorite title sequences of any movie of all time.
100%.
Watchmen is up there too, and there's a couple other ones, but that whole scene with Baby Groot dancing and like everybody getting their butts whooped behind.
The war montage, awful, yeah. Everything after
that wouldn't be in my top three.
It's a really good montage, and the rest of the movie was downhill from there.
I gotta be honest, I liked what they tried to do, but from a visual perspective, I don't think it's as clean as it should
have. Okay, well, you saw it in 3D, yeah, to be fair.
I did not.
Oh, you did not? Okay, never mind. I take that back. Really, in 2D, I thought it worked. But
I really loved the song choice.
Song was great, yeah. Which again is why I think like what they wanted to do was a really good idea, but it ran into some visual issues that the rest of the movie didn't have.
They used that fight with the obelisk so much in like every trailer that I was actually fine. I missed most of it and watched Groot dance around it.
I thought it was cool that like that was a lot of the trailers, like that fight, and it was done in the first 5 minutes of the movie. That was great, I thought.
That's a smart way to do trailers. I think that some of the blue screen work just didn't quite match up for me.
I feel like you and I saw totally different. It worked for me. Did it work for you, Rachel? Like, did you notice any bad green screen?
I did not notice bad green screen. Okay. And because we started rewatching the Lord of the Rings films recently, I feel like I'm really good at pointing out bad green screen, bad blue screen at this point. I didn't notice it.
Okay.
I would have said something that would have bothered me.
I did not, because I agree with you. I loved that.
Yeah, it was so good.
I am willing to go back and rewatch that.
Even if there was some flaws in that fight in the background, you were focused on Baby Groot. And if you happen to notice one of the guys getting knocked around kind of hilariously in the background, then it was like, oh, but Groot. You know?
And maybe that's my problem, is that I wasn't super sold on the toddler Groot thing, so I was watching what was happening.
Which is funny, because Rachel was the one that told us, like, right when the first trailer dropped, that she was not in on Baby Groot. But Baby Groot, just aside from that scene, did it work for you guys in the movie?
Well, before we dive into that, I want to go back to chat real quick here, because chat's got some interesting stuff going on. Doc Rev is saying that Ryan here is making his nipples hurt with all of the deal with it comments.
Deal with that.
So, you know.
Rub some lotion on it and be done.
And Jordan also agrees that he thought there was a lot of like forced humor, almost like he was expecting like a live studio audience. And I agree.
That actually nails it, yeah.
But yeah, okay, so Groot.
Groot served his purpose. I didn't think he was overdone, and I was like, well,
his humor felt the most natural to me.
I will say, personally. First of all, I'm impressed that Vin Diesel does the voice in different pitches and himself and doesn't get edited later on more so than any of the other actors, so good for him. Second of all, I was really concerned that they were going to have this, like, literal child on the ship with them. And he was going to be like an equal member. But no, they all care for him as
Which
parents.
Which was awesome.
And I loved that.
Yeah, Gamora. Yeah. Oh, so in that opening scene when he's, and it showed in one of the trailers, when he's running around and he like waves to her. And it's like, oh my gosh, when a puppy like looks at you and you want to just acknowledge your existence.
To be fair,
that was the most emotion Gamora showed in the entire
That's true.
Movie.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. But that scene, I bought it. I was like, these guys love Baby Groot, except for Drax.
But I think he did.
It was just indifferent. He's like the jerk uncle that
by the end I think he was
the,
okay. still loves him.
He warmed up to him by the end. As far as that childlike thing, I think they kind of took care of that in one of the post credit scenes.
Yes,
that's absolutely. Kind of yeah.
Let's get to that. The post credit scenes are very important and was a big deal.
There were multiple.
There were five total. Yeah.
None of which actually matter.
That's not true. Two of them matter.
You could include the sixth one, since they kind of wrapped the movie, but before the credits roll, there was like a little bit more footage. It wasn't post-credits, but it was definitely post-movie finale. Yeah. So.
You mean the one with the whistle?
Yeah.
There was only five. The sixth one was cut.
No, there's
only five.
Yeah.
Including that one.
There was a sixth one that they were going to do, but they didn't do it.
Oh.
So there were only five.
All right.
So yeah, that one with the whistle was funny. But
it was a fun moment.
Yeah.
It was fine.
And then what was the second one?
I don't remember the order. So
the whistle one, that's nepotism.
Yeah, okay. It's fine. I like Kraglin as a character.
Gunn's brother, Sean.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm sure that's part of it. But and now I, he's I a liked, guardian. I liked that he was kind of taking.
Well, he's at least on the Milano. We don't know.
He was following Yondu's footsteps, and I appreciated that because they had a special relationship. And if anybody is going to pick up the arrow, so to speak, it would have been his character. So I didn't really have a problem.
Yeah, I like Kraglin. Isn't that his name? I think I think he's fine. Like, I'd be good with him being on the team. I think it would be a weird dynamic for somebody that's not heroic at all in any way to kind of pick up.
But he could be like that guy who's just, you know, he fixes the ship and maybe he's around for, you know, some of the normal comedic.
He stays on the ship when they all are out there fighting, and he's just on the ship. What do you want me to do next?
Gunn, right, he's reading comics.
Sean Gunn plays Kraglin because he also plays Rocket in the green screen bodysuit. So,
which is great to see if you've never seen any of those pictures.
Somebody pets Rocket, it's Sean Gunn they're actually touching.
It's adorable. Yeah,
that's funny. I've not seen those.
Okay, so there was that scene. There was the Watcher scene with Stan Lee.
Which I loved.
I love
acknowledging the Watchers in the universe is pretty cool.
Now, yeah. I will say this to all of the articles out there that screamed from the rooftops that this confirmed that Stan Lee is a Watcher.
No.
The scene doesn't confirm that. It just confirms that the Watchers are there.
I think he's a Watcher. There's been that fan theory, and I tend to agree with it. Why would they pick a normal guy to just be there?
Why did he need a ride from them? Because that's his line, is, hey guys, you're my ride, when they start walking away.
I mean, maybe it's not a Watcher in the traditional sense of Marvel Comics, but he has been there through all these, even non-MCU movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to think that he was a Watcher, I think...
It's not a crazy idea. Yeah. My point is, this scene does not confirm...
No, you're absolutely right.
One way or the other.
In my brain, though, he's a Watcher. And he always has been.
I want him to be.
Yeah.
I really, I had kind of heard that there was a scene that confirmed that, and I was a little disappointed when that wasn't the case. So I want him to be a Watcher.
So the little line, if nobody caught it or paid attention, where he says, I was a FedEx employee or I was a mail employee.
Yep.
That is in reference to the first Fantastic Four movie.
And Winter Soldier.
Civil War. Yeah. So it's...
Stank.
Yeah.
Tony Stank.
So...
It's an interesting thing.
But the Fantastic Four thing's a little more important than the Civil War, considering we know the MCU's connected. But
Fantastic Four is still not connected,
unfortunately. Absolutely. I don't want them to connect to that god-awful movie.
Yeah.
They're going to redo Cap's origin, where he actually started as the Human Torch, then went back in time.
And this is my last time on the show.
Well, he already said he's going to replace
him. So there was the Watcher scene, the whistle scene. There was the teenager Groot scene.
Which is fine. I don't think there's much to say about
that. Fan service.
It was absolutely fan service. I didn't love it.
But it also actually served another purpose, I feel, the saying, guess what? Adult Groot's going to be back next time you see.
One other purpose, too, is that Peter Quill can now understand Groot, which is kind of odd.
That was strange.
Well, then I'm going to throw a third thing in there, then, and show that a lot more time has passed.
Well, Infinity War is 4 years after this movie.
And Guardians 3 won't take place until after Infinity War.
So, I mean, likely we'll have an adult Groot in Infinity War.
They've already been said they
will. Okay, well, there you go.
And that's one thing that this scene confirmed was, next time you see Groot, he's going to be an adult. But as far as Star-Lord understanding him, the fact that he's apparently half celestial and that he's finally tapped into his powers, maybe that has something to do with him.
It didn't bother me. You watched the light leave him.
He just absorbed a ton of knowledge or something.
He could.
It didn't bother me either way.
I do have a question, because somebody on Twitter, and I'm drawing a blank, who brought this up, and I'm curious. Do you think the joke about all the vines and stuff was a masturbation joke?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I didn't get that in the movie, but now that somebody said it, it makes perfect sense.
No, it totally equated to crispy socks on the floor.
Yeah,
in
basically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Alright, so that's three scenes.
Aisha!
And then you get the two scenes that are actually relevant to the rest of the MCU.
We didn't talk about Aisha and the Sovereign whatsoever.
I didn't care about that.
We're going to go back, because there's a couple other characters I do want to touch on, so we will go back.
Oh, jeez, I know.
So there was the Adam Warlock. Uh-huh. Now, they've already confirmed that he is not in Infinity War.
No, but he's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy
3. But he will probably be in Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
And there's a chance that he's in the second Avengers, the untitled Avengers.
Yeah.
They haven't said. Well, it's titled. They can't tell us without spoiling Infinity War.
Which is kind of interesting. It makes me very interested
in
what that is.
You know? So he's not going to be in Infinity War, but he'll be in the next Avengers movie that is...
No.
The Infinity War movies was supposed to be two movies. Instead, they changed it now so that Avengers Infinity War is one movie, and then there's a second Avengers movie that it's was supposed to be part two that
they've changed
it
to.
They're calling it Avengers 4, and
Infinity Gauntlet is the leaked... Supposedly, Zoe Saldana on a press tour said, we're filming Gauntlet next, and everybody jumped to it and said...
It's not a big spoiler, I mean...
Okay, but it's going to have something to do with the Infinity Stone.
Absolutely. Thanos is still in it, so we know that going to defeat Thanos.
If Adam Warlock's going to be in that, then...
He's not.
He's not going to be in the fourth one.
We don't know about
the fourth one.
The interview I read with James Gunn said that Adam Warlock's first appearance, if at all, would be in Guardians 3, which takes place after Avengers 4, which is the Avengers after Infinity War.
And we know
so
that.
It's going to be a while.
Directors never lie.
What I'm saying is, as of today, he's not supposed to be in either of the next two Avengers films. That's all. So what I'm saying is, don't get your hopes up. I just don't want you to
get
your
hopes
up. Although
he is kind of the protector of the Soul Stone.
I was about to say, he's kind of a part of it.
Well, and I think in that scene, you could see a stone above the cocoon. Calling it a cocoon is really weird because it did not look...
It looked like a
birthing pod. But yeah, there was a stone up there that people are thinking is the Soul Stone.
Now, what was the fifth scene? I'm drawing a blank.
The fifth scene was the scene with all the original Guardians of the Galaxy from the comic book. Starhawk, all the rest of them, but Stallone is Starhawk.
Stakar,
Starhawk.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, Miley Cyrus has the little computer
person.
That's
the scene that she was in, that was her voice.
But that is a pretty big thing for the rest of the MCU, and possibly for Guardians 3, because they wouldn't have introduced those characters like that if they weren't planning on using Stallone in Guardians 3.
Ving Rhames and Michelle Yao for 20 seconds, unless they meant something.
They're going to be one of the antagonists in Guardians 3. I would be willing to put money on it right
now.
That's
a good possibility.
And I think that's fun. Just a lot of fun.
That's fine.
In the comic books, they stole the name basically from this other group. So that's essentially, I'm assuming they're going to go that same route. I don't know.
It'd be really cute, to be honest, if they did that. I would love that.
But I love Stallone. People who listen to the show know that I love Stallone. So if he's going to be in Guardians 3 and he's going to have a major role, that would be wonderful.
He will.
But, you know, considering how far away that movie is, I took it to be more of fan service than anything else.
I think you're wrong.
But... Well, I hope that
you're wrong. I hope
that I'm wrong too. I'm just saying that we've got two Avengers films plus a half a dozen other Marvel films before you get to Guardians 3. A lot can happen between now and then.
When does that next Avengers movie come out?
Next year.
Is it 2018?
It's Black Panther, then the Avengers.
So they finished Captain filming Marvel. Infinity War, or they're like in the middle of it right now.
I think they wrapped there in post.
So, I mean, likely they'll be filming that movie way ahead of time. So it's not like he's going to have age significantly or anything like that. It'll be fine.
I don't know how
you just
far,
have to personally well, wait for it, which
here's
sucks.
The thing. I don't know how far ahead they can film Guardians 3 because I don't know how many of those characters are in Avengers 4. We don't know yet, right? Since we don't know what happens in Avengers 3, which is Infinity War, we don't know how many of those characters
we
will
don't,
be in the next one.
But right. I'm sure the people making the movies do.
Right, but my point is we don't know when they can start filming.
No, fair enough.
Right? If none of those characters are in the fourth Avengers movie, then they could start filming very soon for Guardians 3. But everything I've read makes it sound like that's farther off. That's all. So, but let's talk about some of these other characters, though. You wanted to talk.
I love the fact that they... I mean, it was fan service, obviously, to just have him there.
It was actually James Gunn service, because he loves Howard the Duck.
Okay,
so, that's
it
exactly
was,
what
it was me Seth service.
But, yeah, the fact that they got Seth Green to voice it for like a 10-second...
Well, because he did it in the...
I mean, it's just funny that they brought him into the studio
I'm
to record
telling you,
one
man.
Line.
Well,
you
know, I loved it, though. I was just like, there's Howard. No, I'm because he's never going to have a major role in that.
He might come into Infinity War.
People keep teasing it. Dude's gonna look. They're gonna run out of characters at some point. They're gonna do a Howard the Duck movie.
Stop it.
And it can be Seth Green because it's CGI, so it's not like they have to do it immediately. I'm telling you, in the 2020s, we're gonna see a Howard the Duck movie.
It would not surprise me. James Gunn is gold right now to Marvel. So
there's only so many characters for them to choose from. They're gonna start running out.
They still have a lot to go. Honestly, though, they still got a lot of characters to go.
Well, Derek doesn't read Marvel, so he doesn't.
You got to keep people under contract, and right now that's a big problem. So
fair enough.
Aisha was the only interesting part of the Sovereign Gold.
The only time she was interesting was when she was flirting with Peter Quill. Like, that part was legitimately funny and felt more like Star-Lord. Other than that, I thought she was super boring.
Yeah, that's just it. The entire Sovereign felt like a waste of space.
Although the arcade thing was kind of cool.
I did like that. Well, yeah, that was cool.
I didn't understand why they even had the Sovereign in it until the Adam Warlock scene, and I was like, he's gold too. Finally, makes sense. Okay. Now I understand why you just wasted 45 minutes of my life on that.
I feel like they could
have. It wasn't a complete waste, but I mean, it was not the best. Yeah, they could have done without that whole story.
Aisha looked amazing. Like, the Sovereign. The makeup was cool,
yeah. Oh, yeah. They looked great.
But visually, they did a good job. I think that if they had just stopped it as that opening sequence where they were protecting the batteries, like, cool, that's a very Trekkie thing to do, is show some crazy alien species and then move on, right?
Oh, you got pretty far in this time.
But they didn't before you brought it up. They didn't do that, though. They carried them on for a really long time, and it got a little silly. Like, okay, so if these are supposed to be like these really advanced people that are genetically bred for specific jobs, and they're master pilots and master marksmen and master craftsmen, then how come 1,000 of these little ships can't take down the Milano?
Right.
Just not supposed to. I mean,
because it wasn't written that way, Derek.
Yeah. Right. But like, and especially at the end of the movie when they're in that little pod. And they're literally, there's 100 ships just shooting at one point in space, and nothing is really happening.
I did love that they showed Kurt Russell's character just destroying them all with like a blink of his eye and a wave of his hand. Like, that was, it shows you how powerful he is.
That was very celestial.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I think they're probably like leaning towards the fact that he is an actual celestial in the Marvel universe, like in the movie universe. Right. Maybe so he wasn't in the comic books, but.
If they wanted to introduce the Celestials later on, like, the actual one.
And they can bring him back.
Absolutely.
Nice. Sure, yeah. I felt like the Sovereign was supposed to be this really powerful, intense force, and then they couldn't really get anything done.
Which I think was the point. Like, it was funny that these people are all bred to be perfect everything, and that they can't beat this random group of 5 people. Like, yeah, you have to suspend your disbelief for it, but I think that was, like, an intentional decision.
Yeah, I'm because sure the Guardians are a ragtag that nobody, you know, they're not expected to always succeed, but somehow they do.
I feel like in the first film, they just got lucky a lot.
Well, that's the superpower's luck, the group's superpower.
But when there's 100 ships shooting at one single point, and they're all hitting that point, surviving that's not really luck at that point.
So that's who the stormtroopers are underneath.
There you go. The stormtroopers, the Sovereign.
Nice.
I mean, it's all Disney, right? So
yeah, that's true. It's solved.
The stormtroopers evolved into the Sovereign later on, since they're from a long time
ago. No. The stormtroopers, like, the First Order and everything, they kidnap the Sovereign and just repurpose them.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't talked about probably the best character in the whole movie. Yondu. He stole the show.
Michael Rooker, man.
I was so happy they worked out to get his mohawk.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Although the scene to do that, I thought it went on a little long. It was funny, but it was like, okay, how many times can we do the same joke?
I completely agree with that nonsense.
Yeah. Twice would have been funny. Yeah. But yeah, they
carried. I like the interview with Rooker about why his mohawk wasn't tall in the first movie.
Yeah, it made sense.
So for those who don't know, it's because they didn't have enough money to make the ship set tall enough.
Well, they made the set already.
Yeah, well, that
made the set. Yeah.
And they couldn't raise it, so this time they got it right. I just think that's great. Yeah.
The scene where he's in the prison, I think it was. And the Ravager ship, I guess, is what it was. And you see the arrows shooting around. That was probably one of the best shots in the entire MCU.
Beautiful.
I would put that up there with, like, in terms of, like, cool comic book shots, up with, like, the airport fight from Civil War,
where he just gets so much cool.
The elevator scene in Captain America:
The fun Thomas the Train fight between Ant-Man and
I do love that scene.
Yeah. That was
fun.
I love
that. I think
scene.
That really in well terms done. Of visuals, the scene is one of the best in the MCU.
It was a beautiful scene.
Yeah, when you see it, like, the light, it knocked out the lights, and you just see the red. Like, that was neat. Like, it was just really creative, and I really
the color
loved
was
that.
Very vibrant. It was very Guardians,
and when
it was very
it
bright
came
beautiful.
Up, and you see it from, like, above going around. It was just a beautiful scene.
Look up all the people that played the Ravagers. Like, Rob Zombie always is in James Gunn's films, and he played a Ravager. Steve Agee, popular comic. He was one of the Ravagers. He got a couple lines in there, so that was really funny. Hal Rudnick from Scream Junkies
was he? I must have missed that one.
That's funny.
So, good for him. He
Taserface had... was that joke kind of fell flat.
For me. My god, yeah. So long. I get it.
He's got a rough face. Like,
well, okay. I mean, make fun of that stupid name once, because yeah, that's pretty obvious. But I mean,
we don't need 20 jokes about it.
No, a Rocket making fun of it once, and then Aisha like giggling. That's the best. Like,
yeah, that one.
I would have been fine without that.
But. Where he was just all kind of, and as he burns up.
Absolutely.
So how'd you guys feel about Yondu's death?
So good. It was really good.
Marvel, it was the most impactful death probably in the MCU.
Marvel's scared to kill off their heroes. It's Joss Whedon has to push for it every single time, and now that he's moved on, you know, no one's going to push for it anymore.
Well, I think it just depends on who they're trying to kill off, and a character who is one of the old Guardians in the books, it kind of worked. You know, I it worked. As much as I enjoy the character and I would love to see more, yeah, that was like the right character to kill off. Yeah, because it had the right amount of impact, and it doesn't hurt going forward with the story.
I figured it had to be either him or Nebula, because yeah, they're not going to have the guts to kill off one of the main characters.
I didn't like Nebula in this movie. I didn't really say anything about it.
I liked her a lot more. She was
super boring. Like, okay, you can make an angsty look like 40 times. Congratulations, you're not an interesting character.
I thought she was more interesting than the first one. That's true. Yeah,
they did a bald cap for her.
No, but I think part of the problem is, and I've brought this up on episodes before, that the fact that we know contracts for people.
It hurts
the mystery.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're like, well, this guy's got 7 movies under his contract, so obviously he's not going to die, right? How bad is he going to get hurt? Like,
well,
but
I honestly believe the Russo brothers are scared to kill people off. They should have killed off Rhodey in Civil War, and it would have made things much more emotionally impactful. I'm not saying that Rhodey deserves it. I really love that character. Don Cheadle is a lot of fun, but the moment he gets hit by Vision would have been incredibly
I thought they were
heartbreaking.
Killing
them off. So did I.
When that they should have, yeah.
I really thought they
totally
were.
I totally agree.
But that's part of the problem, though, is that, you know, you know that he's supposed to be in XYZ movie, right? It's like, we already knew that the Guardians were filming for Infinity War, so they had to be able to survive, you know?
I also thought that Falcon would have been an impactful death, because the entire time Captain's fighting for Winter Soldier, and then he loses the friend who is actually beside him the whole time and helping him out, instead would have made...
That would have been really cool storytelling.
But Falcon hasn't gotten his due, in my opinion. He needs.
Well, I agree with that for both him and Rhodey, though. And I think the part of the reason those guys are still around is so that way, if they need to...
They can replace Iron Man.
Exactly.
Cap, yeah.
Because you never know. You can't keep paying Robert Downey Jr. $50 million a movie. And Chris Evans has talked about how he's not really sure he wants to continue either.
He goes back and forth. It's so weird.
It's a tough thing to do, to have your entire life be nothing but this one character. I understand that.
Daniel Craig and Hugh Jackman have done the same thing. They're both like, well, I would return for James Bond, or, you know, Logan's dead, but I mean, this X, Y, and Z could get me to come back to the role. So... they love it. They just don't want to keep doing everything that needs to be done for it.
Because a lot of these guys, they love acting, and they want to do other stuff. They want to try more unique roles and stretch their legs.
Also, think about their bodies.
Diet for years.
Chris Hemsworth eats 6 chicken breasts a day, and that's it, when he's in Thor mode. Like, that sucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I follow, you know what.
Chicken breast is good, but that sucks.
Chris Pratt posts his diets, like what he's eating all the time, and it's nasty, like
vegetable
wraps.
And forget the food for a minute. Think of how much time they spend in the gym. I mean, they were talking about how Ben Affleck's already back on his regime to get into Batman shape for the solo film. We didn't even have, like, a finalized script yet for that movie, you know? So imagine how long guys like, you know, Chris Hemsworth and Hugh Jackman have to work out just to film a movie.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, only a few of those guys, like The Rock, wanted to be that way anyway.
Meanwhile, Scarlett Johansson and Zoe Saldana have to stay on the rabbit food diet, like, for their entire careers, because all their roles require that of them, not just every other. So,
no, I mean, that's very true. But I guess if you offered me, you know, $10 million to just work out for my whole life, I could do it.
I don't know. You guys should try it. Maybe. It could be a fun social experiment.
Yeah, give me $10 million and we'll see what kind of shape I can get into.
Check out the GoFundMe later.
No, Patreon's fine. Patreon's fine. I'll take the hit. But I do want to talk just for a brief minute about Stallone's character.
Of course.
Yeah. There's a surprise.
So, well, no, it has nothing to do with really Stallone's ability to do it or anything like that. It had more to do with, for the majority of people seeing the movie who haven't read the comic books, the only reason you know that character is important is because Stallone is playing him.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that character? Do you think he added anything to the movie, or do you think it was
I mean, it was for Yondu's arc, and I mean, I guess the impact of the funeral was great, right? Like, it was super sad, but then when you see all the other Ravagers show up, that made it a lot better. And you wouldn't have gotten that if you hadn't had that scene earlier with Stallone where he was like, you can't deal in kids, and you're never going to be a Ravager, or something like that.
The most important part of the film is the child trafficking. That's what it is. It is the most serious part of the film. It's the most emotionally connected part. So to hear Stallone mumble through what I assume can only be gravel in his mouth.
He got punched a lot in Rocky, okay?
No, really? I have no clue.
He and Dolph just, you know.
Dolph knocked his brain loose.
It would be terrible. But having him hear that, it made me stop and say, what? Like, what is this? Well, so and then they explain it, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful, and it's so good. And to see Yondu sacrifice himself because he's ashamed that he took all those kids to
Ego. Do you think that redeems him?
No.
Because I felt like the movie was a little too quick to redeem him.
I felt like it redeemed him. Like, it's... He didn't child trafficking. Right, no. Like, he did a child trafficking, and the trafficking that he did because he was worried about what was... He didn't have a good feeling about taking him back to Ego.
Star-Lord was like the last one that he decided to stop doing.
Oh, so he did all those kids.
Well, not all of them.
He decided not to take Star-Lord. One of the reasons was, he finally admitted, because he found out what was happening to all those kids.
Okay. He didn't know that they were being killed.
Yeah, that's a tougher one then.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, was it half a dozen? Was it a dozen? I don't know.
I don't think it completely redeems him as a character. But I'm okay with my heroes being flawed, especially since he's a thief to begin with.
Yeah.
I think it redeemed him in Peter's eyes, and that's what mattered to the story.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Yondu's not my daddy, so. He's not.
That's true. I can verify that. Michael Rooker is not Rachel's father.
So I want to pitch something to you, because Jordan was talking a bit about Nebula going off on her own to try and find Thanos. I had an idea for an MCU movie.
I'm sure Kevin Feige is listening right
that
now.
That I think would be really cool. I think that instead of doing, like, you know, the Star Wars Boba Fett movie, I think having a movie where it's Nebula hunting down Thanos on her own and make it small scale and gritty could be really interesting to watch.
Hate it. I don't like Nebula. I think she was a freaking stupid one-dimensional character.
So my thing is, what the MCU is missing, they have all these side characters who have their own adventures and their own self-worth. They need to do like 30, 45-minute shorts that can come out in between the
movies.
Like
the one-shots?
Yeah. Little bit longer than the one-shots. Way less. Like, just one act of a film.
That's fair, but I can think of like 30 characters that would be way more interesting to go watch than
that's
Nebula. Like, make
fine.
This weird grimace at people for an hour
that's
or whatever.
I think it would be an interesting way to get Thanos up and running for Infinity War. Because think
right
of it this
now
way.
He's just been the blue guy on the golden toilet.
But if we had 14 movies, he has no stones.
But if you read about what they're intending to do in the first Infinity movie, that is a movie about Thanos. That movie is going to set up the second movie, which probably is about his actual fight with the Infinity, or like using the Infinity Gauntlet. The first movie is going to be about him actually building the gauntlet, going and collecting all the stones. It's not going to be it's going to be an Avengers movie, but not in the traditional sense. From what they've said, it's a Thanos movie.
You've got all the Avengers are in it. The Guardians are all in it. I mean, you're going to have...
Getting their butts whooped, probably, the whole time.
I mean, maybe,
which
but you're gonna...
they should, if Thanos is going to continue to hold any importance. Otherwise, everything they've built up to since Avengers 1 is garbage.
But tell me, would you rather watch an hour of Nebula going like this? Or would you rather watch Infinity War?
Obviously, that's not what I'm pitching, right? Yeah.
But that's all she did in this movie.
It's not all she did in this movie. It's not. She had some significant character growth in this film. Okay. You don't like the character, and that's fine. I'm not obviously suggesting that it's an hour of her looking annoyed. Okay, that's not the pitch that I'm giving. It's a assassin bounty hunter style film.
And she doesn't even have to cross Thanos. She could come across anybody in the galaxy.
Oh yeah,
including like the weird yellow sex robots for all I care.
Anyway,
those were just weird.
She could find Cosmo, and Cosmo starts following her around. I mean,
there you go, Ryan.
Cosmo.
No, because then I would hate half the movie.
Look,
where the Cosmo was not there.
We are probably close on time. Movie. I have that no idea.
We've gone over, but we did take a break, so it doesn't matter.
That's why I'm not really sure how much time we're at. Let's go ahead and wrap things up a little bit. I've got a couple ratings down here for how the movie did on, you know, IMDb, Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes. Let's go around. You guys tell me how you would rate the movie. If you want to use numbers, letters, whatever you're comfortable with. Ryan, keeping in mind you can only count the scenes with Nebula.
I don't know if the numbers go low enough. I mean, it was in the, like, as far as MCU movies, it was in the middle of the pack. It was not at the top. It wasn't as bad as Iron Man 2, but it was like, it would probably be lower than like Ant-Man and some of the other ones that I thought were a little more original, even though Ant-Man isn't, I guess, that original. But this movie did a lot of things wrong and a lot of things right. It was just a very mixed bag. So I'd probably be somewhere in the 70s, mid-70s probably, a solid C. It was good. It was enjoyable. I like all the characters, but I just didn't think this movie pulled them together the way I wanted to see them.
Fair enough. Robert?
We talked about, I had a few issues with it, but I consider those pretty minor in the grand scheme of things because, well, let's face it.
Killing off Ego?
So
minor.
Well, okay. Fair enough. Killing off Ego is not minor, but for the most part, for the story, for the way the direction of the movies that they've been going so far, I thought everything ended up working together, whether I liked it or not. I would actually give it a solid teeter between B plus A minus.
Oh, wow. Okay. Ray.
I would do a square, which is not as good as a star, obviously, but it's not as bad as...
you said anyway, however she wanted to rate it. This is your own.
I said numbers or letters.
Oh, that's true.
You said numbers or letters or however you want to rate it. Well,
so, you did this yourself, Derek.
Please give us a rating that the world can comprehend.
C+. I enjoyed the last act of the movie and little tidbits here and there in the first two. Otherwise,
opening credits.
I thought it was heavily cliched, too much fan service, and forced humor.
Fair enough. In chat, Jordan gives us a B+, and Doc Rev with a B. I'll let you know if anybody else throws a rating in there, but. For me, you know, I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. I think there was definitely a little too much fan service, too much forced humor. Visually, I thought it was really well done overall. It's a very beautiful film. I love the style of Guardians.
The cinematography was great. It was beautiful. Yeah.
That is how I imagine, like, my Nirvana. If I were to ever die and go to a happy place, that's it. Like, bright colors, mix of fantasy and science.
It was beautiful, and I loved, you know, that they pull out and they show that, you know, Ego kind of has a face on the planet.
Right, yeah, I love that.
That was really cool. There's a lot of the movie that's really beautiful. You know, the Sovereign was really striking visually and things like that. The arrow scene that, you know, Ryan was talking about earlier. But, you know, the story just didn't really hold it together for me. The big climax was hinging on, you know, Ego saying one really dumb thing to the only person in the galaxy that could actually stop him. So it really fell apart for me. So I'm going to say a C+, whereas, you know, the first one is a straight up A for me.
So is it crazy to think that this may be our least favorite Marvel movie this year? That none of us would have guessed that.
I mean, this year?
This year. Yeah, well, we got Spider-Man and
Spider-Man.
I'll say that at the end of the year.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no
way. I'm saying that it's crazy because I would probably never in a million years guess that I would possibly like Spider-Man more than Mike.
But
if
it's a good year. Most anticipated.
I anticipated it being my favorite Marvel movie this year, including Logan, but Logan ended up being really fantastic.
I anticipated Thor being my favorite. Thor is one of my favorite.
Since the trailer.
Yeah, that's the thing. Since I've seen a trailer for it, my expectations have significantly increased.
Thor is my favorite Avenger, you know, male-wise, so I...
So I will say that, you know, the other scores out there definitely have the first film as higher, for the most part, except for IMDb, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. IMDb has an 8.2 versus an 8.1, with the new one being higher. But, you know, overall, I think that most people are, you know, saying that this one is, not quite as good as the original. It does come in seventh in the MCU as far as Rotten Tomatoes is concerned. And that's the critic rating at 82%, but fans have it at 90. So
fans know more than Rotten Tomatoes.
You know, just something throw out there. Rotten Tomatoes
can suck a big bag of dicks.
What she said.
Big old bag.
Thank you for that.
There's nothing wrong with dick. We've used it before.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I think I used it earlier.
Yeah, it's
all right. Well, all right. Anyway, I think that's going to be it for us. We are off next week. Before I want to let people know that.
I'll just say one thing. Did you guys also notice that in the credits, that I am Groot's?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Also, did you notice the Grandmaster dancing?
Yeah.
Yes. And then I was super disappointed when there was no post-credit scene with him.
I know. Yeah. I was really wanting one where Star-Lord would be sitting in the arena while Hulk and make betting against
Thor. Yeah, that would have been so easy.
Yeah, it would have been super easy, and it would have tied him already.
They didn't have to be there in the movie. They could have just been in there.
Yeah, they could have been like, you could have heard the announcement that you hear in the trailer, like, you're incredible. And you hear him go, yes! And then, you know, like, 20 on the green guy or something.
Right,
like that,
That been he doesn't have to be in the stands. He could be like at like a bookie thing.
Yeah, exactly.
At the stadium. Yeah, totally. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to get that in.
No, you're good. Yeah, that was a really fun. I liked the credits. I thought they were really beautiful. But anyway, yeah, so Ryan's got some stuff to say here, but we are off next week. I want people to be aware of that.
I was unaware of that, so now
so,
I know.
So we've told you.
I'm sure you have.
But but we will be back the week after that. And we're fan casting
the Disney princesses. We're going to have a first-time guest on there. We're going to...
Ryan's really nervous.
I'm not nervous. I was like, I just...
How about this, Ryan? You can fan cast the live-action ones they've already done. If I were you, I would pick...
Every once in a while, they give me an episode, and you can totally tell because I take advantage of it.
I highly suggest Emma Watson as Belle. I think she would do a good job.
I don't like that casting. All
right, so Ryan, what do you got for us?
Okay, so if you don't know, we have a Patreon. It's where you can give us money and say thank you for producing this great content, and then we give you things back to say thank you for giving us your hard-earned money. And so, in celebration of that, and something like less funny and jokey than I usually do, but I thought it would be fun to do, I think that we should come up with a Heroes Awesome Mix Volume 1. And we're going to make a Spotify playlist from this podcast that we're going to share on our Facebook page or in our Instagram thing. Derek's going to do that. And then we're going to have one only for our Patreon subscribers that will include John's choices on the track and Ian's choices on the track.
Awesome.
Other hosts. And I'm sorry that you can contribute to them, but since you're not a normal host... and if you guys can't think of a song, I did make a cheat sheet with some songs that you may want to throw on there. Okay, so I'm going to say my first song. I have 12 tracks here, so each of us get to pick 4.
Oh man, this is really tough.
And I'm putting, I have a cheat sheet that I can give you if you want to pick.
Ryan's putting us on the spot.
I'm sorry about this.
Are there like just our favorite songs?
I would say try and keep it in universe if you can. So like, he's got a Zune now, spoiler alert. So I would say it's probably part of the joke is going to be that there's like no songs after 1990. So I would say try and keep it songs before 1990.
Before 1990.
And if you can keep it in theme, like space or
Zune.
I'm aware, but I'm saying that I think it would be hilarious if we got a Zune that could have songs from like 2016, but he can only listen to older songs. So just start off. I'm going to throw out Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Mm. See, I was going to pick a Queen song.
You can pick any Queen song. We're not going to stick like so far to the rules that you can't pick the same artist twice.
Okay, so I would like to add in an Elton John, and while the obvious is Rocket Man, I want to do Benny and the Jets.
Benny and the Jets, that's a good choice.
This is really tough for me. I feel like we need some Michael Jackson.
I agree.
Absolutely. Totally.
None of the ones I picked were Michael Jackson. So.
Oh man, so we need some Michael Jackson.
And you can help him if you can think of Michael Jackson.
What Michael Jackson?
Dirty Diana, or depending on the scene.
Yeah, if you can like picture in your head a good scene for it, that's even better because then you know it's going to tie into the universe.
The red jacket from Beat It reminds me of Star-Lord's red jacket a bit. But
I like that. I feel like you have to dance to that song, though.
And
he dances all the time, and half the themes in the movies are about dancing.
He didn't really dance much in this one.
No, but they talk about dancing a lot.
They talk about dancing a lot. That was slow dancing.
Oh, my bad.
Okay, doesn't count.
What about The Way You Make Me Feel?
Okay. That's a good one.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
That's my favorite Michael Jackson song.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
I
love that song.
Okay, my second one is Heroes by David Bowie.
Yes!
Good pick.
I like it.
Okay, so because I feel like Star-Lord needs this in his life, and only because of that, I feel like Star-Lord really missed out on the fact that Sir Mix-a-Lot existed.
Yeah, that was 80s.
I guess
he was gone. Yeah, so I'm good with that. I mean,
So I feel like he needs to hear Baby Got Back just for his own personal life.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's a great song.
I'm saying that if I heard that in the movie, I would probably go, okay. But, you know, we'll go with it. That's part of the appeal of this whole thing. Okay, Baby Got Back.
I feel like if it went from, Blue Swede and Fleetwood Mac to Sir Mix-a-Lot, he would be like, what has music come to?
Yeah, what is this world is falling apart?
Well, personally, I personally think because, in the comics, he's all about 80s music.
Right.
So,
I mean, that's barely 90s music. It was, 1990, so.
Yes. Yeah. But so, I think you do need something that's super signature 80s, like maybe something from Huey Lewis in the News.
Yeah, I actually don't have any Huey Lewis in the News on my cheat sheet
so
or this one. I couldn't find any songs that I was like, this is really, really fitting into the universe for me. Because they sing a lot of like bar songs.
They do.
So,
having a tough time.
But you need something, I feel like you need something, or something from Loverboy.
Yeah, I mean, Loverboy would be all right. I mean,
but there's just something, you know, that's like,
I'll tell you that every song that I made, I'll put on my list was pure 80s, in my opinion.
Was
pure
it?
80s,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
See, my wheelhouse is a little more 70s, so I'm trying to think.
70s is good.
Yeah, pick some 70s.
All right, well then.
Hey, there's some songs.
I'm looking through my.
Okay,
my
collection. In chat they say slow dancing counts. I don't know.
Okay. So, okay, so here we go. I want to throw in a Meatloaf track.
Okay.
And I want to go with the title track, Bat Out of Hell.
Okay. I think that'll fit. I like that.
I think that could be a really fun scene for some type of like space chase or something.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. My next one is Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Taylor.
Oh, so good. So good.
I kind of like the Heroes theme. Like,
my next one is actually that I want Foreigner's Jukebox Hero.
That's a good one, too. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of Heroes.
You guys are so fast. You guys are so fast.
Because we
fast.
Know what's good, Derek.
I just picked bands I don't know. I love, and go with it.
The way I grew up with music was a little weird. None of it is really organized by dates. And so I'm trying to organize.
Doc Rev says Kings of Rock by Run DMC. And Pure Lee says Cheap Trick.
Ooh, Cheap Trick.
So those are up
for grabs.
And I think I'm going to take a couple songs from chat. I forgot to say this at the beginning. So if you guys have songs, throw them in here, and we're going to pick our favorites of the ones in chat, and we're going to add that as your contribution to the playlist.
I like it.
I'm ready to skip
Skip me. Okay. Keep going.
Footloose by Kenny Loggins on there because it's a reference to the first movie.
Kevin Bacon. Yeah,
but,
I love it.
Also, I think that that's a good, solid 80s song.
Very. It totally is.
What's your next one, Rachel?
Okay, so she was part of almost all my favorite soundtracks in the 80s. And I'm going to pick my favorite song from her because I love it. Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
That's a good one.
It's a good song.
Derek, do you want my cheat sheet?
Go ahead. Yeah, give me. I think I have something, but.
Do you have any Pat Benatar?
That's a good one.
No, but there would have been, that would have been a
good
one.
I want some ZZ Top. And I'm trying to pick the right ZZ Top.
You have two songs.
So I'm thinking.
Use them wisely.
You guys help me with this one. Okay. I'm thinking either Legs or Sharp Dressed Man for ZZ Top.
Out of those two, I'm leaning towards Sharp Dressed Man.
That's kind of where I was going to. Ray's not happy with this.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm with you. I'm not feeling as easy. Time.
Not at all. But I mean, it's up to Derek. He gets to pick two songs, just like we got to.
No,
pick
it's fine.
You don't think anything on that list really jumps out at you? There's not one song in particular that really jumps out at you or anything.
I kind
of
want
to... I know you want me to pick Eye of the Tiger, but I'm not sure what scene that would go in.
It's like a super pump-up song from the 80s. Star-Lord would love that.
But what scene would that go in?
Whatever scene James Gunn wants it to go into. I don't know. I'm not writing the movie.
But my point is that we're trying to fit them into the film, right?
Yeah, but so you think that Sharp-Dressed Man would fit in better than Eye of the Tiger?
I'm not saying it would fit in better. I'm just saying I would like a ZZ Top song.
That's fine. You can pick a ZZ Top song. I'm good with that. It's your choice. You get two choices there.
Get rid of Sir Mix-a-Lot. I'm good with that, too. A different 80s. It's a lot of fun.
You can look at the list, too, if there's anything.
Billy Idol's Rebel Yell.
That's a good one.
Good. I like that. Rebel Yell, that'd be a great song.
I love Rebel Yell so much.
I'm trying to think of a good Pat Benatar that I could recommend.
You know, Your Best Shot, obviously, is going to be right up there.
Yeah, that would be pretty perfect, to be honest.
This is just something like mentally I was not prepared for.
Barracuda by Heart would be good.
Yeah, that would be a good. Any like the female like power ballads are always good. Mm-hmm. That's why I had Holding Out for a Hero on those. One of my favorite 80s songs. And I could just see like something like a epic fight happening with that song in the background.
Have you ever heard Frou Frou's remake of it? Really good. They covered it.
I don't think I have. Really I tend to avoid remakes of my favorite songs just because I know that...
Like, I do too, but it was featured in the Shrek 2 soundtrack and I was really blown away by it, yeah.
How about More Than a Feeling? Boston.
Yeah, I'm good with that. That totally fits.
Okay.
You have one more, Derek.
Is that good? I get one more.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I get one more.
Maybe a Journey song?
Okay, so in chat we have some other suggestions.
Yeah, totally.
We have Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins, but I already have Footloose, which I think is a better choice personally. We have When Doves Cry by Prince, which would be really good. We have Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
No, I want that.
Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue.
No, that's...
Which one?
Prince.
Prince.
When Doves Cry? Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a great...
Okay, we get to pick one more from chat.
Who suggested that one?
That was Doc Rav.
That's a great choice.
So good, dude.
That is such a good choice.
We get to pick one more from chat. So we've got Kings of Rock by Run-DMC, Cheap Trick, Danger Zone, When Doves Cry, Sing Alive, Dr. Feelgood.
It's the song Cheap Trick, not the band Cheap Trick, correct?
I don't know. Yeah, but which one? I don't really know Cheap Trick.
And Motley Crue, which one?
Dr. Feelgood.
Oh, Dr. Feelgood?
I assume.
I think that's my least favorite Motley Crue song, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that would fit into a Guardians movie, personally.
Because we haven't picked any other hair metal.
That's right. True.
Yeah, and honestly, any of my friends will tell you I'm a hair metal fanatic, I don't see it fitting too well, to be honest.
I don't think
it unless it's like, you know, unless it's like the softer ones like Bon Jovi or something.
So any of those songs, we're going to pick one more from chat, so.
Say them again.
Kings of Rock by Run-DMC, Cheap Trick, Danger Zone, Kenny Loggins, When Doves Cry, we already picked. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue.
You know, maybe a Bee Gees song, but I don't know about Staying Alive.
I do like the Bee Gees. Where's...
Derek's not up on his
Jive Talking. Okay. Jive Talking might be a good Bee Gees song.
It's not bad. That would fit in well.
Yeah. So we're going to take the Bee Gees suggestion and just change the song?
I think so.
Okay. What was the song?
Jive Talking.
Yeah, it's a good choice.
That's a good strutting song, too. Well, most disco is.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's 13 tracks. So we're gonna upload that Spotify playlist sometime. I sprung this on Derek, so no guarantee on when it's going to happen. So and Patreon subscribers, we're going to, when we send out our monthly email, we will include a link to the full Spotify playlist that has John and Ian's songs.
The deluxe. So,
yeah, they will each pick four songs like we did. And then we took
but they're not going to be put on the spot, so.
They get a little more time to think about it. Derek is unhappy about being put on the spot, but I did this to be fun. So Derek might have to deal with it.
There might be a couple bonus tracks for me then when I have time to actually like.
That's not how this works.
No, well, I'm controlling the playlist.
I will make the playlist and send it to Derek. And he will put it up there and I will get with John and Ian.
I have the power,
so
I do.
I do too.
All right, that is it, guys. Thanks for checking us out. Be sure to hit up heroespodcasts.com and Heroes Podcasts on Facebook and Twitter. All that good stuff. Drop us a review on iTunes, and we will give you a shout out on the show, whether it's a good or a bad review. You know, be honest. And we'll catch you guys next time. Bye, everybody.